Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big, get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim, and Matina is filling in for Kasim today. And our guest today is Ken. So Ken, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Yeah, I live up in Calgary, Alberta, so Western Canada. I'm the COO of RB Snappad. It's a small family-run business, so the CEO is my brother. The founder was my father, and the head of marketing is my other brother. So yeah, family affair.
All right, so do you mind sharing exactly you know, what you do and what makes you better than your competition?
Well, we, you know, back in late 2015, we came up with something called a permanent jack pad, which doesn't mean anything to most people because unless you're an RVer, it's kind of what the heck is that, right? So if you are an RVer, you know that you need jack pads, which are just things that go underneath leveling systems. So modern RVs have big metal feet on them that help them level in sort of any kind of terrain. So before us, people carried around stuff to put under them, which they call jack pads, which was, it could be a big slab of rubber, it could be a piece of wood. I've seen people using cutting boards under like $200,000 Class A motorhomes. So yeah, we came along and designed, I guess you could call them shoes made out of rubber. So they actually snap onto these feet permanently rather than having to carry stuff around. And yeah, we launched it kind of out of our garage in late 2015. We just came up with a sort of a one pager. We had one product and a couple of SKUs, and we made our first sale like the next day. And then it just was sort of off from the races there. And now we have, you know, over 50 SKUs and 16 different feet, I think, types. But yeah, the reason we're better than the competition is nobody has really done this before. So it was kind of a new category creation in the industry here.
That's amazing. So what gave you this idea to come up with this product?
Yeah, it's so the genesis of this company actually started in early 1990s. So all the kids were still in school. My dad and a co-founder of his who was an RVer, they came up with a leveling product way back then, but it was long before direct to consumer and the internet, right? So they had to prototype the product and then roadshow it. They had to go to major distributors so it could get into RV dealerships and retailers, right? What they didn't know while they were raising money to do that was they were getting diluted out of their own company by the lawyer they had hired to help them raise money. So that product is actually still a staple in the RV industry today, but as it popped, they were basically told that they didn't own the company anymore and sort of shuffled out. So he came back to us when all of us were sort of grown up and had our own careers. So I was in marketing before this. And he said, hey, I want to take another shot at the RV industry. And we want to do something different though this time. So he said, let's try to do these. We call them mag pads because we're going to stick them to the feet with magnets. That didn't work out, but luckily we kind of stuck with the idea until we found something that did.
So, I mean, you know, you mentioned that it's a family business, which is really cool, right? And so I'm sure there's been challenges as well because you're working with family. It's not always easy. So can you talk about some of those challenges, at least like in the early days, and maybe even now sometimes with, I think a lot of family businesses, like sometimes it can be challenging because like it's your, you know, family member, it's your father, it's your, siblings. Like, how do you guys manage those relationships from business to also like it's your family?
Yeah, it's on the good side of things, everyone is intrinsically motivated to make the business work in a way that you probably wouldn't get any other way, honestly. But yeah, there is a lot of work internally to adjudicate the relationships of all of us who are the executives of the company to make sure that we're working together to open up lines of communication when there are disagreements, because it's inevitable, right? When you're running a business, you're never going to agree on everything all at the same time. And there have been arguments to be sure, but we always make sure that it's focused on the business and we're all trying to do the best that's for this company. And I think we all ultimately understand that at the end of the day. So when you all have the same goal, you all have the same motivation, and you have a good foundational relationship, you can usually get past all that other stuff.
So essentially, you know, in starting your business, did you guys make sure it was all family because of the experience that your father had? You know, when he raised money, he got screwed over. You just said, okay, let's make sure we keep it a family business. It's all in the family. That way nobody can take any control of this company. It's ours.
There's definitely sort of a vein of that in what we've done. That said, when we started, you know, we had no money. It was completely bootstrapped. You know, there was friends and family gave us a little bit to get us off the ground. There's no VC funding here. so the only people who would work for the company were family. So I was working, you know, full-time at the time at a marketing agency. My youngest brother was SEO full-time somewhere else. So I'd get home after work and or on the weekends and do what I could for free. And then my brother, who's now the CEO, sold his house at the time so he could work for about a year without making any money at the job. So it's like when you have that level of sacrifice, it's hard to ask anyone else to do it. And then as we got a little bigger, so yeah, my mom actually pitched in at one point for customer service. My wife is now the head of customer service. Again, when you're growing really fast, but you still don't, you're putting it all back into the business, you need people who are willing to jump aboard for less than anyone else. It's hard to put up a LinkedIn ad for some of the jobs we had because, like, we're going to pay you nothing and you're going to work 60 hours a week.
Makes sense. So how are you able to leverage your marketing expertise when starting this company, even today?
Yeah, so I was the head of social media, major agency here in town. And that kind of started as the basic, like, get more likes than followers. And over time, I became the media buyer on Facebook. So I had that knowledge going in. And so the two things I did early on that really helped us gain traction were influencer seeding. So I'd done a few of those programs for other clients. And I knew that if we could get the product in the influencer's hands, it would add sort of instant credibility to us. So that we did that early, and that's a full-fledged program for us now. It's a major tentpole in our marketing strategy. But the other thing I did was leverage Facebook, which is actually a lot easier to do back in like 2016, kind of a different time. But even at like $5 or $10 a day, which is all we could kind of afford for budget, because this product was new and the value prop caught on really quickly, it was a relatively easy product to market on Facebook. So we really got traction through those two tactics.
Makes sense. So is a lot of your strategy, so it's more like affiliate marketing when you work with these influencers, like what is that, or what are these, like, you know, agreements look like when you're working with them?
We have various sort of agreements. A lot of it starts at like product seeding. So we will contact someone and say, hey, do you want to try this product? We'll send it to you for free. And the AOV of our product is about $150. So it's a pretty significant giveaway. So if you say yes, we set up sort of a review it for us or do an installation video. Let us know what you think. Post it on your site if you like it. We see how that organic content gains traction if there's a good fit between the brand and the creator and their audience, obviously. And then we actually may build out ongoing relationship, retainer-based deals, things like that.
Cool. So what's the role of technology in your business right now?
Pretty substantial. So we began life as direct-to-consumer, obviously. Our first website, I don't know if it was a WordPress site or something with a free Shopify button on it, but we're now Shopify Plus. We have a full-blown tech stack behind that. So it's Klaviyo, Recar for SMS. There's probably half a dozen other apps on there that I'm forgetting. There's a lot of stuff in there, obviously. Slack is our communication channel. We were fully remote back in the day, so we were working from our homes or from, you know, coffee shops for a long time, and part of our team is now still partially remote. But I am always got the ear to the ground to find things that can help us, be it in conversion rate optimization, be it in in improving user experience. So there's a big sort of friction point in our product, its compatibility. So we've made up this product, and we've had to create the fitment database. We have over 10,000 RVs in that database now and more every day. So there was no, you know, thing we could go and plug into and say, oh, this works with this. So we've built a lot of compatibility UX around that. So we have a land bot, which is a no code chat, which helps gives people a series of questions through contingent logic, and it can make a product recommendation. We have a search tool, but I'm actually looking deeply into the new AI stuff. I'm hoping at some point we'll have an AI bot that can query our database and run people through this contingent logic string sort of simultaneously in real language and sort of make that an even smoother experience.
Definitely. So how do you view this bot really helping your customers?
So the issue for us is if you're not in our database, which we use as like confirmed RVs, we know that, you know, our product fits this year, make, model, and trim. But there's a lot of RVs that we haven't come across yet. So we do know a series of questions to ask someone about their RV. What's your leveling system? What size is the leveling feet on it? What shape are they? How many are there? And we can run them through that. And if they give us the correct answers, we will give them a product recommendation or shunt them to a waiting list and say, we don't have anything for that yet.
That's cool. So do you think there's any other AI use cases when it comes to your business?
Yeah, we're looking into AI to supplement customer service, which is a huge piece for us, definitely. It's one of the reasons we've grown so well. We have take pride in customer service. Plus, we need our agents to be well-educated in this rather niche product to a very niche industry. So we can't just sort of outsource it, which happens a lot, I think, in D2C. That's just not an option for us. But we are looking at some platforms now that can create agents that will take a lot of the sort of day-to-day stuff off of our human agents' plate so they can focus more on, you know, the deep sort of connections that some people need to make in order to make the decision about a product or troubleshoot it and stuff like that.
So do you have like a live phone line where your customers are calling in and asking questions about your product?
Absolutely. And as you can imagine with RVing, there's a big baby boomer sort of segment to it. And they're much, you know, some of them are much more comfortable calling on the phone than messing around with any sort of technology.
That's more, yeah, that makes sense. I think 100%. I think it's like folks that are in my generation, younger people in their 20s, 30s, they're like, yeah, I don't even want to speak to anybody. But like, you know, right. It's like my parents, they would call 100%.
Oh, yeah. We have people still call us and say, I just want to give you my credit card over the phone. Okay. It's a lot more secure online. You don't know who I am, but yeah, they're just more comfortable doing that.
So when they're calling, it's not you answering. You have folks that are working for your company, right?
Yeah, it's my wife and her team.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. So she's customer service. So in terms of marketing, you know, what platforms have been the most efficient for you when you partner with these influencers?
YouTube is actually our big one. So Instagram is kind of second, but YouTube is probably our top awareness channel right now. Even though we don't spend, we don't pay to be on YouTube. It's just through the influencers. But the good thing about YouTube is one, almost every RVer is on there because there's a lot of education and do-it-yourself to the community and to that lifestyle. So there's just a lot of that stuff that lives on YouTube forever. But the good thing about us is as we get more and more of those people doing reviews or installs is it compounds over time because it's just, there's 10 of them and then there's 30 of them and then there's 100 of them. So we become ubiquitous on the platform for any RVer who's looking for stuff. Whereas something like Instagram is a lot more feed-based, right? So even if something goes viral, it's gone in a day or a week or a month. Whereas YouTube, that stuff kind of lives forever.
That's awesome. I think you're one of the first people, like it's just, you know, based on what you're doing, it's like very few companies are, you know, able to be successful with these kinds of like long form videos. Cause like most of the companies that we speak with, oh yeah, it's all about TikTok, Instagram reels. It's like, there's no attention span, but like what you're really focused on are these like cool long form visit people using your product. It's like a 30-minute, 1-hour YouTube video where people see it. Okay. Now like, I want to go buy it.
Yeah. It's all about, cause as I said, they're educating themselves on how to use an equipment or where to go. So yeah, it could be a 15-minute install video, and they say, this is how I did it, and this is how it's working, and yeah, they eat it up.
Awesome. So what would you say is your top business priority in the next 3 to 6 months?
We're kind of at the point where we really want to scale aggressively. So for years, the first few years, you know, we did more than double in size for the first, or in terms of revenue, first 3 years, I think, sequentially. But the issue with our industry is we kind of reach a plateau for every kind of leveling system there is. So our first product, probably relevant for about 15% of the market. And then our next product was probably relevant for 3% of it. So there was all these little chunks that we had to make different pads for. And now we're kind of up to about 90, 95%. The first few, 3 years, we either hit ceilings because we didn't have the right product done, or our manufacturer just couldn't make it fast enough. So we've spent years building up a supply chain and developing new products, and we're kind of at the point now, okay, how do we scale this aggressively moving forward?
So you mentioned manufacturing. That's like a very interesting point, because you started in your garage, as you said. So how have you been able to find these right manufacturing partners that have helped you make the product in high volume, good quality products? I think so many companies struggle with that.
Yeah, that was a significant challenge, just because when we found our manufacturer, it was a long search. It was probably about a year for the first one. And we just found a rubber manufacturer in the US who was willing to take a chance. He said, I can make this. I know you don't have any orders. You know, you're not an established company, but you know, the per part price will be this, and you know, let's see what happens. So we did start selling obviously right away, but he was a much bigger outfit. So he had a lot of major accounts that he was. So, you know, we'd sell, I don't know, $5,000 worth of stuff in a month, and he wouldn't invoice us. He just wouldn't bother. And then $6,000 the next month, and then he wouldn't invoice us. So the funny thing is we didn't have to pay our COGS very much for the first year and a half, because this guy just didn't bother invoicing us. So we'd have cash in hand from sales, and we weren't paying to make the product, which was good until we started scaling. His operation kind of, the pandemic hit, his operation kind of honestly folded. So that manufacturer went out of business in 2021. And we were stuck in 2020 up here in Canada. Nobody can travel, and we had to source new manufacturers for this now established product. And we were making, you know, we had to make tens or even hundreds of thousands of units a year at this point. And we had to do it remotely. So we had to call people. We had to describe to them what we were doing, send them, you know, emails with PDFs of the tools we were using, have them make a sample, send it to us over the mail, wait weeks for it. It took us 2 years almost to get a real robust supply chain. And I think we went through four or five different manufacturers before settling on the two that we have now.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it kind of makes sense that he went out of business if he wasn't invoicing you.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like it was a boon for us early on, but it was also a red flag for when we were a bigger company, right?
Yeah,
which was, tough lesson to learn, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, he was like, what happened to our you know, payroll? He's like, well, I was never sending invoices.
Yeah, we were when the pandemic hit, we had to turn off all marketing, all direct to consumer, and we were 40,000 units back ordered by I think the start of 2021. Because we were omnichannel by then, so we had wholesale orders coming in.
So how are you? Yeah, no, exactly. So I guess I wanted to know, like how were you able to survive? Because I feel like, you know, that can really set companies back and, you know, shut them. I mean, COVID was a weird time. Like, how were you able to manage, like, really surviving and thriving through that?
Lots of praying. Honestly, we took some loans, and we got a bridge loan from the business development here in Canada, so the BDC, which is the good thing is we had so much momentum heading into the pandemic that we had enough, you know, revenue and history that they could look and go, okay, well, this is a thing. And of course, the pandemic was so strange that you couldn't really hold what was happening against us from a business perspective. But yeah, it was just a lot of grinding, showing up, not really knowing what's happening. You know, our our manufacturer did continue to try to make stuff up until he went out of business in 2021. So we were getting dribs and drabs from him, but it was enough for us to send our wholesale orders usually 3 or 4 months late. So that was some cash flow that we had. And then we got up sort of back up and running by the middle of 2021 with new producers. And by the start of 2022, that's when we were sort of back on our feet.
So what is the one biggest piece of advice you wish you knew before you started this company?
Whew, yeah, that's a good one. because there's a lot that we've learned. One of them was, if you're an entrepreneur getting into things and you're just trying to get on your feet, you don't tend to pay too much attention to things like finance, like real bookkeeping, real finance. You're just worried about, are people buying it? And can we make money every day? And we were the same, you know, first year or two. We had a part-time bookkeeper. She would come in once a month, sort of do our books just enough so we could give it to an accountant at the end of the year, that type of thing. But once we started getting into real business, we had to clean that up really badly. Like it was, I think it was probably 12 to 18 months of going back and going, wow, this was bad. This is wrong. And especially because we developed a lot of bad habits around not having to pay COGS and getting invoices that were sort of written on napkins almost from our manufacturer. So, you know, learning cash conversion cycles, learning inventory management, forecasting cash, like all that becomes extremely valuable, because if you're making cash but you don't know where it's going, or if you're actually making a profit, you can go out of business really quickly.
That makes sense. So if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you expect things to go for your business?
Well, I'm hoping that we'll be up, let's see, 20 to 40% over this year. I'm hoping that we've launched a new tentpole product. So what we're doing is we're starting to advance the catalog beyond permanent jack pads into other leveling, so we can now sort of start expanding LTV, because with our product, which is made out of recycled rubber tires, it's kind of a one and done, for unless you buy another RV or you scrape them off somehow in a terrible accident. You know, you don't need, we've sold stuff to people in 2015 who still have them on their RV. So we do want to now start developing cross-sell and upsell catalog. So I'm hoping the major tentpole product for that will be out by this time next year.
So if somebody wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website and social media handles?
Yeah, so we're at rvsnappad.com. That's usually, that's us on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram as well. And I'm on Twitter a lot, actually, at Kent_Wilson.
Awesome. Well, Kent, thank you so much for your time. We're rooting for you, hopefully, in 1 year. We can chat again as you guys keep growing your company.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining. All right, thanks. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.